Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You are listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 625. I'm Amy Matheny, and rainy week we've got ahead here in Chicago, and it was chillier this past weekend. So yes, we have been duped again by springtime, but the bunnies and the birds and the trees and the grass and the flowers will all be very happy by the rain. I think they would like the sun too, though, in equal parts, as would all of we. But it is a rainy day here in Chicago, but let me tell you, that is putting nothing rainy or dark over our show today, which I'm very excited about, because we are kicking off our big celebration this year for 30 years of Windy City Times, Chicago's LGBT news and entertainment weekly. And we are an offshoot here at Windy City Queer Cast of the Windy City Times. Also, you know, we do events and we have our weekly email and our website that is extraordinarily active and has so much information on it at windycitymediagroup.com. So we're honoring today this 30th anniversary, looking back at the beginning of LGBT publications in the U.S. and in Chicago. And who better to do that with than our editor and our fearless leader, tireless leader, Tracy Baim of Windy City Times. So today, a big show looking back at 30 years and all the exciting things that are coming ahead in our 30th anniversary year that will start now and go through December as we honor all the voices that have helped to give a tapestry of what our community's story has been over the past 30 years here in Chicago and in the U.S. and in the world. And also what's going on in the U.S., the world, and Chicago and in the world of entertainment. Kirk Williamson here with me to do the LGBT news and what's going on in theater. I saw a great show at the Goodman, the Lillian Hellman classic, The Little Foxes, which I enjoyed immensely, and The Divine Big Red, Megan Murphy, this past weekend at the Uptown Underground, which is such a cool club. And I see that James Gavin's going to be singing there, and Michael McBride, two of our previous Idol contestants and finalists. So it's really a beautiful, beautiful club there in Midtown, in Uptown, sorry, and so exciting. So lots going on. So, you know, get out there, get excited about spring, and we are going to be excited about our 30th anniversary all year long and just excited to be a little part of it. Tracy Baim on the podcast today.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. A federal judge whose ruling striking down Kentucky's ban on same-sex marriage led to an appeal being heard in the U.S. Supreme Court, has died at age 66. U.S. District Judge John G. Hayburn II died at home in Louisville, surrounded by family after battling cancer for several years. Last year, Hayburn struck down Kentucky's bans on gay marriage and on recognizing same-sex marriages from outside the state. The rulings were reversed on appeal, but the Supreme Court heard arguments on them April 28th.
The U.S. Supreme Court has turned away a challenge to New Jersey's ban on so-called gay conversion therapy for patients under 18 years of age. It followed a similar action last year that left California's therapy ban in place. Lower courts dismissed lawsuits challenging the ban, which New Jersey Governor Chris Christie signed into law in 2013.
The U.S. Supreme Court is now to determine the fate of Nebraska's gay marriage ban after the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals decided to postpone a May 12th hearing scheduled to consider the constitutionality of Nebraska and three other states' gay marriage bans. The appellate court said they were holding off on any further consideration in the cases in anticipation of a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, thus waiting until the appeals court is allowed to potentially rule on any matters not addressed by the nation's highest court.
Smith College, the 140-year-old women's college in Massachusetts, will accept transgender students who identify as women this fall. After a year of study, the Board of Trustees voted to clarify Smith's admissions policy to include people who were born male but self-identify as female.
A new poll has found that a majority of Republicans, 56%, would attend the same-sex wedding of a loved one. Greater support was found among Democrats at 80% and Independents at 70%. Overall, 68% of Americans said they would attend the wedding of a loved one who is gay, while 19% said they would not, and 13% refused to answer.
Alpha Graphics has apologized for the owner of its franchise in Sewanee, Georgia, who refused to print wedding invitations for a lesbian couple based on his religious beliefs. Like almost two dozen states, Georgia has a religious freedom measure pending. Georgia's bill claims to exempt businesses and organizations from providing their employees health care services and procedures such as abortion and contraception, which are mandated by Obamacare.
Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon has signed into law a bill that allows ministers to refuse to perform same-sex marriages if such marriages conflict with their religious beliefs. Fallon said that the law will protect the constitutional and religious rights of Oklahomans. The law says no licensed, ordained, or authorized official of a religious organization can be required to solemnize or recognize a marriage that violates that official's conscience or religious belief.
Ben Carson, the 63-year-old retired neurosurgeon turned conservative star who believes that the gay rights movement is part of a communist conspiracy to bring about the New World Order, has confirmed he will seek the Republican presidential nomination in 2016. Carson is expected to be the only high-profile African-American to enter the GOP's presidential primary.
Carly Fiorina has also formally declared herself a candidate for president, making her the first woman to seek the Republican nomination in 2016. Fiorina, 60 years old, is a former chief executive of Hewlett-Packard and lost a 2010 Senate bid in California.
Iowa Western Community College will offer LGBT students a new community housing option this fall. The Pride Q-munity, a cluster of 40 suite-style apartments, will serve students who identify as LGBTI and their allies. About 40 students have already expressed an interest.
The Oregon Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood heard testimony on House Bill 2307 aimed at ending conversion therapy for minors. President Barack Obama has called for an end to the therapy for young people. California, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. have passed bills banning the practice therapy.
Fox News contributor Guy Benson has come out of the closet in his new book. Benson's sexual orientation is given little fanfare, a footnote in a 316-page book, as he puts it. In End of Discussion, How the Left's Outrage Industry Shuts Down Debate, Manipulates Voters, and Makes America Less Free and Fun.
Two gay high school seniors in a small town in West Virginia attended prom together. They went to prom at Musselman High School in Inwood, and both said the evening went beautifully, with no negative comments.
Airbnb has removed a Texas bed and breakfast from its listings after its host reportedly kicked out a gay couple. The couple, who were forced to find a hotel for the night at last minute, said they later discovered that the listing had described the property as straight friendly at the bottom of the listing.
GoFundMe has shut down the crowdfunding page of an anti-gay bakery after it raised nearly $110,000 in donations. An Oregon judge recommended that the Christian owners of Sweet Cakes by Melissa be fined $135,000 for refusing to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. Aaron and Melissa Klein then launched a campaign on GoFundMe that quickly reached $109,000 before it was taken offline. However, the money raised will still be made available for withdrawal.
Florida's Second District Court of Appeals has ruled that a Florida lesbian cannot use Florida's law banning same-sex marriage to prevent her wife from divorcing her. Danielle and Krista Brandon Thomas were married in Massachusetts in 2012, but their relationship soured upon their move to Florida, and Danielle filed for a divorce a year later.
The Ecuadorian National Assembly has passed an amendment to its civil code that will legalize same-sex civil unions. The South American country passed the broad reforms, which also included raising the age of legal marriage to 18 and specifying criteria for marriage and divorce. Although the civil code will state categorically that they are not considered as marriage, this is being hailed as a step forward for equality in the country.
In Northern Ireland, politicians in Stormont have voted against same-sex marriage for the fourth time. The motion on equal marriage failed by two votes, 49 to 47. Same-sex marriage continues to be blocked by the Democratic Unionist Party.
In Argentina, the government of Buenos Aires made history by granting Latin America's first legal recognition of a three-parent family. It allowed a lesbian couple and their son's biological father, who donated sperm for their pregnancy, to be included on the child's birth certificate. The government's registrar of persons said that the child's best interests are best served by all three parents being recognized.
German Klaus Burkhardt beat 20 other hopefuls to be crowned Mr. Gay World 2015 at the grand final in Cape Town, South Africa. In second place was Emmanuel Mas Luciano from Hong Kong, while Tommy Lappi from Finland took third.
In entertainment news, British singer Sam Smith has canceled the remainder of his Australian tour due to a hemorrhage on his vocal cords.
Absolutely Fabulous creator and star Jennifer Saunders confirmed that the hit British sitcom will officially be back as a film, along with co-star Joanna Lumley.
Rosie O'Donnell's divorce is taking a bitter turn. Her estranged wife, Michelle Rounds, has filed for full custody of their two-year-old daughter, Dakota. O'Donnell filed for divorce against Rounds, her second wife, in Manhattan Supreme Court in February.
Grand marshals for this year's New York Gay Pride March are actors Sir Derek Jacobi and Ian McKellen. The gay actors co-star in the UK sitcom Vicious and will lead the annual procession on June 28th.
Out R&B singer Frank Ocean, born Christopher Edwin Bro, finally legally changed his name to Frank Ocean after being blocked from doing so last year because of an outstanding number of speeding tickets. Ocean, 27, will release the follow-up to his critically acclaimed record at Channel Orange this summer.
Little War is a new play exploring the 20-year relationship between one of history's most famous same-sex couples, Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas, is playing this month of May at New York City's Clarion Theater.
Iconic singer Joni Mitchell is expected to make a full recovery. Her team moved quickly to reassure fans after court documents surfaced stating that she is unresponsive. The singer-songwriter, 71, is at UCLA Medical Center.
And Carey Mulligan, Bradley Cooper, and Dame Helen Mirren are among the Hollywood stars nominated at this year's Tony Awards. John Cameron Mitchell will receive the special Tony, while Wicked composer lyricist Stephen Schwartz will receive the Isabel Stevenson Award. Alan Cumming and Kristen Chenoweth co-host this year's Tony Awards on Sunday, June 7th on CBS.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, this is Sandra Bernhard, and you're listening to me on Windy City Queer Cast. Cast your net wide, and who knows what you'll come up with.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of May 11th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Experience the Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Doubt, a riveting story of authority, suspicion, ambiguity, and religion. Produced by Writers Theater in an exciting, site-specific production in the library of the Glencoe Union Church. Under the direction of William Brown, the audience will be a fly on the church wall. Don't miss Doubt at Glencoe Union Church, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Eden or Metra. To purchase tickets to Doubt, a parable, visit writerstheater.org.
Award-winning Porchlight Music Theater presents Stephen Sondheim's hilarious classic, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, at Stage 773, now through May 24th. For tickets to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, visit porchlightmusictheater.org. It's time for Comedy Tonight.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
For 30 years, publisher and executive director Tracy Baim has had front row seats on all things LGBT in Chicago, and she proudly celebrates the 30th anniversary of Windy City Times and the collective effort it has taken so many over three decades to make sure our stories have been heard and our news covered. This is a big retrospective year with lots of fun things in it. It's frothy, and we want all of you to be a part of it, and so I wanted to have Tracy on just to look back 30 years and to look ahead at least 3 to 10 of what's to come. So, hey, Tracy, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on the show again.
I know, it's great to have you on. I kind of can't believe it's been 30 years. I feel like I've been with the company almost half of them, which is crazy.
Yes, time contracts. I was 22 years old in 1985 when I was with the co-founders Jeff McCourt, Bob Bearden, and Drew Badanish in founding Windy City Times. We also had a bunch of folks like that were typesetters, that were writers and editors and photographers and delivery people, all of them who helped launch that first edition in September of 1985.
So the actual anniversary is September. We are starting with Windy City Times. Lots of fun things starting to unfold, and we're going to talk about those here in just a few minutes. But you mentioned the key players who, along with you, started Windy City Times, but what was the ember? I mean, whose idea was it? Whose living room were you all sitting in, or what watering hole were you all hanging out in? I mean, how did it actually start?
Well, in May of 1984, I started work at Gay Life newspaper, which was owned by Chuck Renslow. Bob Bearden, at the time, was our sales manager. Jeff McCourt was his boyfriend. And he wrote also a gossip column under the name Mimi O'Shea. And Drew Badanish was eventually the art director there. So by the summer of 1985, Jeff McCourt had made an offer to Chuck Renslow to purchase Gay Life newspaper. Gay Life newspaper was, you know, owned by Chuck, and Chuck owned the bathhouse, a bar. He was very active in Democratic politics. And so there was concern in the community that power was too consolidated and that the paper really couldn't be fair in terms of its coverage of the community. I never, as managing editor of Gay Life, I did not experience that from Chuck, but I knew that was a perception in the community. So Jeff McCourt and Bob made an offer to Chuck, and they were kind of following through with that offer, but then backed out on it. So in, I think, probably late August, early September of 1985, Jeff and Bob, and I think Drew was there, took me to drinks at a bar called Different Strokes, which is where, which is now another gay bar there. And they really convinced me that the future was with this new entity. I think it had already been named Windy City Times at that point. And they asked me to join them as managing editor. I was managing editor at Gay Life at the time, and they convinced me that this was really the future. It was not an easy decision. I didn't want to go run out on Chuck Renslow. I thought he'd been fair to me. After all, I'd been promoted to managing editor, and I was only 22. So I was really torn about it. I was really actually crying about it because I didn't know what to do. And so I obviously made the decision to go with the new paper, with Windy City Times. And what's interesting is that parallel to launching the paper, Chuck Renslow sued Windy City Times, in particular Jeff and Bob, because he felt it was they had reneged on a situation. They had found out information about his business, and then they went and started their own thing. So they fought in the courts parallel to the launch of the paper. I know I had been deposed in legal documents. I actually never was privy to if there was a settlement or if there was a loss or anything. It was never anything I knew about because I was not named in it. But obviously, eventually, we started Windy City Times in September of 85. Chuck Renslow kept Gay Life going for a few more months with a new staff, but it eventually folded, I think, in like spring of 1986. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the timeline. I didn't have the rosiest of times with Jeff McCourt as a legend in the community, but I really liked Bob Bearden, his partner, a lot. Drew Badanish, his art director, left probably a few months in. We were working out of Bob and Jeff's apartment on Melrose Avenue by the lake for quite some time, and unfortunately, within a few weeks of us launching, Bob Bearden was diagnosed with HIV and eventually AIDS, and you know, obviously he did not take this well, but he also really just kind of didn't want to face it. And so here we are working out of their apartment, mm-hmm. And it was very uncomfortable, the fights that would go on between Jeff and Bob and all of us trying to do a newspaper right in their apartment, literally. Yeah. We were on the third floor apartment, and we had a typesetting machine in the basement. So by early of 1987, when Bob was near death, we were actually now out of their apartment into an office situation. I had a series of meetings with some people I knew in the community, and they made an offer to buy, after Bob died, they made an offer to buy Windy City Times from Jeff, who had been saying, you know, oh, I really can't continue. I don't want to do this. He and I had so many blow-ups about editorial issues, and so I thought he'd be ready to sell, but as soon as he found out that I was behind it, he was absolutely remotivated and livid. So I had no choice but to walk, and I gave 2 weeks' notice, and most of the staff, I'd say about 95% of the staff, came with me, and we started a publication called Outlines, which, you know, ran for 13 years, and then eventually he suffered another staff walkout that started with Free Press. And so a year and a half later, after they were fighting in the courts, I was able to buy Windy City Times from Jeff, and it was really, it was very emotional. And Jeff, you know, he said, you know, he felt like this was always, you know, my baby, and he was glad that I was able to take it over for him. And I, too, felt like I was getting my child back out of foster care. And we, you know, and he lived a few more years. He died in 2007. We purchased it back from him in 2000. And kind of the, you know, that's kind of the legacy. So while I helped co-found Windy City Times, I was gone from it for 13 years and doing Outlines and Black Lines and then Levita and other papers. And that's kind of how you came into the picture, too. Around that time when we purchased Windy City Times, we also purchased Lesbian Gay Radio, and that's how you came to be with us in right. our early years as the new ownership of Windy City Times.
Yep. Yeah, I remember being with Lesbian Gay Radio, and, you know, while I was doing the early days of radio in the back half of the 90s, you know, there were these differing papers. I mean, there was Windy City Times, and there was Outlines, and then Nightlines, and your monthly publications, and then they had their walkout. Then there was Windy City Times and Chicago Free Press, and Outlines.
Yeah, for about a year and a half, 2 years, there were three weekly gay newspapers in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, when I think about the time in which it was, too, it was right, you know, heading into the millennium, and in a really pivotal time, we'd kind of moved past, you know, Ellen DeGeneres coming out. Obviously, we're way past Katie Lang, Melissa Etheridge. It was kind of all the ladies that came out. But was the big news in the early days of starting this paper really HIV and AIDS and how that was impacting the community? I mean, obviously, in your small apartment of newsmakers or news tellers, reporters, in this small, you know, in this apartment on Melrose, it was impactful to you all. So it had to have been impactful to the community at large.
Oh, yes. You know, when I started at Gay Life newspaper in May of 84, I think there were fewer than 100 diagnosed AIDS cases in Chicago. It did hit the coast a little bit faster and stronger, the West Coast and the East Coast. So Chicago at that point in 84 had just under 100 cases diagnosed. And it was a story that was in every issue of every paper we did, certainly even almost since then, but definitely in the 1980s. It was both a personal story because I was, you know, not only working with people who were, we had a travel writer who was diagnosed and died within 7 days. We had theater writers, we had drivers, we had Bob Dearden right in our midst who was suffering from it. So it was very personal. As someone who was very young at the time, it was really incredible, almost in a war zone, like knowing that you would take somebody's photo and a couple weeks later know that that was going to be the photo you would use with their obituary. People would ask me and say, you know, I would like to see these photos when you develop them, because obviously I couldn't show them right away, but they would like to see them because they wanted to choose a photo to use with their obituary. It was really incredibly painful personally, but it also created this sense of urgency of the movement overall, and it sparked many new people to be activists. It also caused the coming together of various parts of the community. Mm-hmm. Certainly there were race and class and gender issues happening, but people, for the most part, set those aside to work on the big issues. In Chicago, the big issues were, of course, related to anything to do with AIDS. So it was whether someone was interested in housing or walking to someone's pets or someone feeding people, fighting against discrimination in the funeral homes and dental chairs. There were people working on all aspects of AIDS. And then there were also people who were using that moment of political power to make sure we also got our protections and public accommodations and jobs and housing. So that's where the big push came for the Chicago gay rights bill. And so that was, you know, the community was just exploding with activism. One of the really key moments in time in the 1980s was the 1987 March on Washington, which I was able to attend. I was covering it for Outline newspaper at that point. And when Chicagoans came back from that march, the city was transformed. There were thousands of new activists that were born out of that march on Washington. People like Victor Salvo, who was the co-chair of the March for Chicago's participation. People that came back and worked on Ron Sable's campaign for alderman. People who came back and formed Impact and re-engaged on the AIDS issue. So really, it was just an amazing time to cover. It was both painful but also powerful. And our, you know, the friendships that were made from people that survived that era still last to this day. So it's really, you know, it was really an honor to be able to meet all the people I was able to meet before they passed away. And almost every day I think about what an obligation that creates in a good way that I have to make sure their voices aren't lost to history. The Chicago Tribune and sometimes were very rarely covering these issues, and if they were, it was from a pretty homophobic way. They did transform to, by the late 80s, early 90s, to be better on it, but they still couldn't cover the depth of what was happening in our community, the volume of death, and personal trauma that was going on in every discrimination case, etc. So it was really quite amazing to have met the warriors on the front lines back then and still be able to remember them today and pay tribute to them.
Well, and I remember in 87, because that was around the time when I was, I don't know if I was coming out. Was there another big march on Washington in like 92 or 91, 92?
Yeah, 93 was the next march, and then there was also Stonewall in 94 in New York.
Okay, well, maybe it was the one in 93, because I remember that, you know, watching on C-SPAN in Tennessee, and I remembered what it did, and this kind of takes us into from 85 to 95, if you were dealing with, you know, the fire and the urgency and HIV/AIDS and those being key stories and the birth of some new activists for these past, you know, three decades. I don't know if you agree with me, but I would kind of look at like the next decade as really being the decade of visibility and on a level of, I wouldn't say mainstream, but it is when we started really identifying who our straight allies were, our celebrity allies. And with that, I think came more corporate attention to the community and dollars and things like that. Is that what you found? Did you find a big surge in growth from 95 to 2005 or give or take a year or two?
Yeah, I think by the early 90s, more corporations, there were some pioneer corporations like Absolute and others in the 80s, but by the early 90s, there were publications like Out Magazine and the glossier version of The Advocate, and certainly the regional LGBT media, that was all professionalizing at a much higher level. So there were corporations that were starting to kind of tip their toes into it.
Yep.
But some of them would tip their toes in and then pull them right back out if they had any backlash. So
yep.
That early 90s was a touch-and-go period of time. By the mid to late 90s, there was more support from corporations, but I think the peak really started to happen by the 2000s. In the 90s, there was a lot of back and forth, and there were things like the murder of Matthew Shepard. There was obviously the coming out of Ellen DeGeneres, Melissa Etheridge. There was lots of this, both backlash as well as moving forward. You definitely felt like it was two steps forward, one step back. You'd have the election of an openly gay official like Tom Keola became the first openly gay elected official in Illinois, and then you'd have losses as well. By mid-90s, AIDS and HIV, the medication started to work a little bit, but nobody knew if that meant anything permanent. And so it's still, even today, obviously, I believe, a major issue that we're not dealing with enough. But by the mid-90s, people did started to live a little bit longer. And so larger issues of community started to take hold. I think in part because you had the national election of Bill Clinton, that also gave the community some clout, both nationally and locally, to push for other kinds of issues. But again, with Clinton, we were often on the defense to make sure there wasn't worse things that he was going to do than the compromises he was making on marriage with the Domestic Marriage Act and on the military with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So again, it was like this two steps forward. Right. We're powerful enough to push for change, but then we don't get the change we want. We get a compromise that's almost worse. So it was really this kind of schizophrenic decade for the community, and this much stronger power started to happen soon after that. But it was all built on the work of decades before. Like the whole marriage equality push was absolutely built on the decades of work from activists from Minnesota to Boulder to all sorts of places where people were pushing the envelope on marriage. And then by the late 90s, early 2000s, the civil unions work started to change into marriage equality work. And that's where we really saw our community strength grow.
What have you seen, when and how have you seen just the avenue by which you publish a paper change? When did that really happen? Was the digital age just an entire revolution to putting out a paper?
Well, what's really funny about the timing, because I'm a geek about typesetting machines, I learned on hot lead machines in high school, and then then I learned computer machines. But when we started Windy City Times, we were using a big old typesetter machine that's the size of a refrigerator. But when Outline started in May of 1987, I had a choice to make with our investors. Were we going to stay with that model, which those machines were maybe $125,000, or the first Apple 512Ks were coming out, and a company called Quark Express was putting out a design program. And so while it was, in today's standards, the most incredibly backwards system, it was actually, I think, the total all-in costs for us were around $20,000. So it saved us over $100,000. So it took a little bit longer. It was more cumbersome. But it really was, I think, saved us in our early years because we didn't have this huge debt over us, and then we would have had to convert to computers anyway. So we were one of the first handful of papers in the country to be desktop publishing because we just happened to start when you could do that. Nobody else would have, they would all have been stupid to change over in 87 because the machines weren't capable of what the typesetting machines could do at that point. So we were lucky on that front, and I've ever since really tried to keep right ahead of that next wave. But that was one phase of it, so desktop publishing. The next phase was when faxes came in. Faxes made it much more easy for writers from across the country to not just send their discs in, but really fax their copy right away. Mm-hmm. And then when electronic bulletin boards, BBSs, came into play, that also helped us transmit materials. We had a reporter, Rex Walker, who still sometimes writes for us, who was really ahead of the curve on both the fax and the BBS system for us. And then, of course, the Internet in around 94 or 95 is when we first launched our website presence. And again, I think we were one of the first handful of gay papers in the country that went online. A lot of people feared giving away your stuff for free, but we had already been a free newspaper, so right. It didn't seem like an odd step to put your stuff online for free. So our content really goes back to 94, 95. So every phase of that helped speed up the process. You know, there were times in the early 90s where I would be up 3-4 days in a row without any sleep just because I was keying in people's articles, formatting them, shooting stats of the photos, pasting up the photos. I mean, it is so incredibly fast now what we can do. We can proofread the PDFs electronically from our art director who lives across town and all work from home. Yeah. You know, it is an absolute dream now, the ease. There are glitches that can happen with power outages, but that would have been the case no matter what. So yeah. I really feel like we were lucky. We kind of hit every wave of that change and met it head on and capitalized on it.
Tracy, over the years, have there been other key cities and other publications that you've looked to that continue to survive today as well, or maybe those that have gone on because, you know, gay media and straight media, so to speak, no one's immune to how media has changed and how hard it is to keep a publication going or anything in print, honestly.
Sure.
So are there people that you've looked to, whether LGBT, and who are some of those key people who've kind of walked this path with you to inspire you, challenge you, share trade secrets, et cetera?
Sure. Firstly, about a year and a half ago, I put out a book called Gay Press, Gay Power, just to kind of have a sense of where gay media was today, but also where it came from. So it kind of traces the trajectory of the very first gay publication in the country that we are aware of came out of Chicago in 1924 by a man named Henry Gerber. It was a newsletter for the homosexual rights group that he had started, and then it was shut down by the police. So that started in 1924, and so it traces the history of LGBT-related media across the decades. The first significant publications were in the 1950s, and in Chicago, there was the Mattachine Midwest Society had a terrific newsletter that was edited and written in part by Bill Kelly and Mary Kuda, who are still with us today in the community. Mm-hmm. So they were definitely the pioneers that I learned from and felt connected to, both on I knew them, but also I knew their work. And so in Chicago, there was a really rich press history and into the 1970s. And I was aware of that, especially I am, you know, even more aware of it now because I look at these old issues and see what pioneers they were. But in Chicago, none of the 1970s papers lasted into the 80s, except for Gay Life, and then it folded in 85. Nationally, however, the Bay Area Reporter is the oldest consistently running gay newspaper, founded circa 1970, and the Washington Blade, I think it was 1969 actually, and then the Washington Blade came shortly after that. Nationally, the Advocate started as a newsletter, then newspaper in the late 1960s in Los Angeles, and then it became a national publication by the 70s. So those are kind of our pioneers. Also, the Philadelphia Gay News started around the mid-1970s. There were lesbian-specific publications that were started then. Some of them still go today, like Lesbian Connection. So I'm kind of aware of all the landscape, especially in the United States and a little bit of Canada. And then I'm part of an organization, the National Gay Media Guild, that we work together. There's only 11 weekly gay newspapers left, and there's, I think, about 12 or 13 biweeklies. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of magazines and monthlies and all sorts of other things. But the weekly and biweekly newspaper market is definitely contracted since the 1990s. There were, you know, many, many more. At one point, there were probably hundreds of publications of any kind serving the community. And now, while there still are a lot of bar publications and monthlies and quarterlies, et cetera, there aren't nearly as many weeklies and biweekly newspapers. So it's definitely a very different industry. The strongest ones out there include the Washington Blade out of D.C. for sure. And then there are weeklies in New York and Detroit, the Bay Area Reporter in San Francisco, Dallas, and a few other markets. I think in Florida and Atlanta, there's bi-weeklies and weeklies in most of the major markets, but it's still not as strong as it used to be.
So what do you think has been one of the biggest national or global stories or stories of ours that on a national or global level brought a claim? Do you think the biggest story has been when then-Senator Obama returned our survey and said he supported same-sex marriage only to change his stance on that? I mean, obviously, you wrote another whole book on Obama and the LGBT community. But do you think that was like our highest visibility moment?
For Windy City Times as a newspaper, do you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, because that was technically Outlines newspaper, I should say, because I had Outlines in 1996. And now, since we merged, we basically say that survey was from Windy City Times, but it was from Outlines. Yeah, that definitely put us on a national stage right after the election of Obama in 2008. In the early 2009, before the inauguration, we found a copy of that original survey. Thank God I'm a pack rat, right? so we found that, and it was amazing to see in his own, you know, he had typed it out, a full answer to the question. He could have just said yes or no, but he said he was in support of full marriage equality. So, yeah, on the national stage, I think so. And what would be interesting, I think, over time, I think it's been our consistent coverage of the LGBT community in the political sphere and the entertainment sphere. Like, if you look at our paper in any one issue over the last 30 years, we don't just focus on any one part of our community, whether that's based on race or gender, but also based on interests, right? Mm-hmm. We don't just cover politics or sports or entertainment. We cover everything. And so we kind of consider ourselves a general interest LGBT newspaper. We're not specializing in bars. Our bar publication does that, Night Spots. The newspaper itself really will cover anything, the biggest stuff that's happening in the community, locally, nationally, internationally, in that 1 week. As the internet's come along, that's really changed. We try to make the newspaper this one-stop place to find the most important stuff, but we also break news online every day. We also put probably three times the amount of content we put in print, we print it online every week.
Yep.
So there's a lot more that we are able to do with the web than we can ever do with print. So it's freeing, but also makes it almost an endless pot of work. If you don't control really what your message is. So because there's so much out there, we really make sure that we at least know and have the LGBT community of Chicago covered, right? Yeah. I mean, nobody else is doing it with the depth we can do. Other people are covering national issues, but we will cover and make sure that all the big stories that are affecting the LGBT community in Chicago get covered every week.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really been the savvy of you and others looking ahead and you know, creating an email list before others were doing that, putting the publications online and on the web, as you said, and extra articles or more in-depth articles or more pictures on the web, having a website, a very comprehensive dense website for many, many years with over 3.5 million hits a month. And you know, those kind of things that have made the difference. So as we honor and mark this milestone of 30 years, I know you just launched a redesign. I know the stories that we're telling, you know, briefly on this podcast, there's going to be so many more reflections editorially starting May through December, probably throughout the whole year. But one of the big things that, you know, you took a page from some other people locally who've just done this either to mark transitions or milestones is, you know, this online campaign, a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign, as you will, you know, because we've been trying to do so much to build up this writers fund, which I guess we should say is like writers and photographers and the people who come out and cover all these stories. I mean, so many newspapers are laying people off, and we're trying to have more diverse voices. And at a time when our community is even more expansive and more visible and you know, there's more unique, smaller groups within the community that need their stories being told now, you need writers to cover that. So talk about this online campaign a little bit that we'll be launching here, you know, this week or next, to help fund these writers and photographers and the people who are really out on the streets, on the beat, so to speak.
Right. Right. So we're doing two things this year for the 30th anniversary. One is, they're both on the theme of 30 years. So the first one's going to be an online campaign through Indiegogo It's launching by the end of May, and it's going to be a $30 for 30 years campaign. So the starting point level is going to be basically asking the community. We've been free for 30 years in print, 20 years online, and a dollar for every year. You know, and that will go towards our guest columnists. We have a couple new writers who are homeless youth that are going to be writing for the paper. We also have ongoing investigative reporters. So all this money would be going to fund our editorial projects, research, as well as guest writers, et cetera. There's going to be a terrific number of prizes we've been working on with Amy and our other folks to get some fun prizes, and Amy can talk about that. And then the other one's going to be September 27th. It's a Sunday afternoon at Sidetrack Bar. We're going to have a party. It's going to be a $30 entry, and it's going to be there'll be lots of prizes there, lots of personalities, and it's just going to be a fun way, hopefully, to have some folks come back from the early years of the paper and pay tribute to the folks that we've lost over time, and have some old covers up and just have a fun party. So that's our basic campaign. We'll have other things during the middle of that, including our 30 Under 30 Awards, which means even more this year now that we're turning 30. So all of the people in our 30 Under 30 Awards will have been not born yet when we were born.
Yeah.
So it'll be kind of a fun event at the end of June at Center in Halsted with our 30 Under 30 Awards.
Well, and it's amazing because with these Indiegogo campaigns, what we can do is we can allow you, the listener or the reader or the surfing on the internet, to go online and say you want to make a donation. And if you make a donation at $30, you know, that would be amazing. You know, if you feel like that's the most you can do, that's a lot. And we would really appreciate it because we do have so many amazing writers, and our writers have gotten so many awards on a national level and are really the people that nationally and globally people are looking to for all kinds of investigative reporting and stories that just even recently, you know, we've had nominations and awards for our stories on the trans community and homeless community and the youth community. But also, if you want to make a little bigger donation, like say you want to make $75 or $100 or $150 or $250, because you really value LGBT news and entertainment still being something that you have access to that you know is coming from LGBT people. You know, us telling our own stories, making sure we ask the hard questions, making sure we cover the stories that may, not get attention from mainstream media. We have some really fun perks because we have things like a VIP night where you can go to Kinky Boots so you can just pick it. It's not an auction. Like once we put it up on the website, and we're going to be promoting this through social media and on our website and on our email every week and in the paper. But say you want to see Kinky Boots because you saw it when it was first here or you missed it. Well, we're going to have a VIP experience that if you give us a certain dollar of money, you can select that if it's still available. You can have great seats for you and a date, go to see Kinky Boots and meet and greet with the cast and drinks at the show. So there's going to be all kinds of things. We're partnering with many of the major theaters and arts organizations in town and some hotels and other businesses. There's some fun performers like Tom Michael and Becky Minzy will do a private concert in your house. Or Megan Big Red Murphy, many of you know her either from her hit appearances with Paramount Theater or in Mary's Attic as her Big Red Cabaret. It's been such a hit for a number of years. She'll just go and show up wherever you want her to and sing a song to somebody you want a song sung to. And you can even pick that song, or Megan will probably write one off the cuff if you'd like her to. And say pretty much whatever you want, but put a smile on somebody's face with a really unique prize. So these are the neat things. It's not a live auction. It's not a silent auction. It's a perk. So if you go on our site and you click $150, you can search and see all the different $150 prizes that you can select from. And so you're giving to us, but you're getting something back. It's like, you know, what a great thing that you get something to show for it. So we hope all of you will be a part of that. And I'll be promoting it each week here on the Queercast too once we launch. Tracy, where do you think the gay media is going to go in the next decade? I mean, when Laverne Cox is on the cover of Time magazine and a show like Modern Family, like Ellen now, we don't even blink. We don't even think about the fact that there's a lesbian on television every you know, day of the week in the middle of the day talking about her wife or, you know, being openly gay. A show like Modern Family, which was cutting edge just a few years ago, just feels like Laverne and Shirley or Happy Days, or I mean, it couldn't feel more milquetoast. Now we have Transparent, who is, you know, winning all these awards. Shows that are on ABC Family, like The Fosters. I mean, you know, our images now are just daily occurrences everywhere. They permeate. So where is gay media going in an age where we are everywhere?
Well, I guess the most comparable example we can look to is ethnic media. I think that regional ethnic media still provide a really important voice for local communities where the mainstream media in those towns just can't do the same dig-down effect that regional media can do.
Yep.
So whether that's online or in print. I think actually what hurts more is the national media, and that's been proven out. Many national LGBT publications have folded. Advocate went to folded and then went to less frequency in print. It always had been online, but it folded its print for a while. So really, I think the national, it's harder to show that you've got a real dig down effect in any one market, penetrating in any one market, whereas the regional media can still do that. It's very difficult to predict 10 years from now. Going online only is not an option for most regional publications to survive. The nationals have barely figured out how to survive economically with their online components. So when you're at a regional point and you're free, there's huge diminishing returns if you try to get economic money, you know, people to pay to look at your site when you have smaller numbers than a BuzzFeed or a New York Times. So I think all of us, all regional media, are really watching what's happening in other people's markets within their own market and trying to stay ahead of the trend. And, you know, even predicting 2-3 years from now is going to be difficult. I think it's going to be a combination of different revenue streams. So like at Windy City, we've done promotions, you know, with your Windy City Idol we did for years. Those are kinds of things that enhance. These 30 for 30 campaign is going to enhance this year. We hope to have a nonprofit arm that launches sometime in the next couple of years that will also be where foundations fund the journalism side of what we do. And, of course, advertising is going to be the bread and butter. So, but I think a lot of publications are looking at multiple revenue streams to make sure that they're not reliant on any one of those in case there's a downturn again. I think the next downturn will, again, kill off some of the gay media. That the 2008 downturn saw that, and I would expect that another downturn would do the same thing.
Well, and it'll be interesting with the Supreme Court announcement here. I mean, this is obviously the biggest stage that the LGBT community has practically been on, I don't know. I almost think in our history, with whatever, you know, the Supreme Court ruling will come down in June, and then we'll head into an election. So I think, you know, it's going to be more vital than ever that on a small community level or a city to city level, that LGBT, we can't rest on our laurels, so to speak. And we're going to have to position, and that's going to be the hard thing for people not to become passive once they feel like things are being accomplished.
Oh, it's a big problem I foresee. We have to make sure that we're not forgetting those in our community that are the most vulnerable, those who are still battling HIV/AIDS issues and access to health care on a fair level, those who are living in poverty because they're working at minimum wage jobs that can't pay the bills. I mean, LGBTs are part of every spectrum of the general society, and we have an obligation to, as an LGBT community, once we see successes, to not forget those who are most vulnerable within our ranks. And I do fear that. I think that Canada, once they got marriage equality, definitely experienced a downturn in donations and organizations were closing. And we just can't afford that. We have too many people that need our help. Once people get their tax credits, they need to apply those tax credits to help the community more.
Yeah. Well, and as I always tell people, and I haven't said this in a while, but I'll say it right here on this show. You know, one of the most radical, if you think, well, I'm not really political or I'm not really into politics, but I love listening to the podcast or I pick up the paper because I'm interested. You know, one of the most radical and political things you can do is support an advertiser or let somebody know that you saw you know, you saw their ad in Windy City Times, or you heard about it on the Queercast, or just, you know, that a company is LGBT friendly, even if you didn't see it with us, that you say, you know, thank you, I chose you because I'm a part of the community and I see your support. It's the most political act we can all do, is where we put our money and how we spend our money. So just always remember that. That can be a very private, quiet thing in some ways, but very, very potent. So you don't have to, you know, be the most politically savvy person. You don't have to be able to write the big donations to make stuff happen. You just have to walk into a store or give feedback on a survey or let a company know, hey, I really appreciate you supporting the LGBT community and I'm supporting you because of it. And that can be your phone, your car, your the restaurant you go to, the bar you go to, the type of alcohol you drink, the theater you walk into. I mean, it makes a difference and keeps those businesses, you know, wanting our business. So it's good to be verbal and vocal about that. It comes back. It definitely pays forward. Tracy Baim, thank you so much for being on with us. We can't wait to party in September. We hope all of you will get involved and help us spread the word about our campaign, our online campaign. I'll be telling you more about it throughout the next weeks as we go through these big weeks of May and June with the podcast. And Tracy, thank you for all of your service to the community for 30 years, and I hope you're able to just really enjoy and look back and also feel some motivation in the community behind you for the years ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everyone, I hope you have a great week. Looking forward, we're so close to IML and International Mr. Leather and Bears coming to town and leather men and women coming to town and big festivities and Memorial Day. And it's all right around the corner. And then we launch into Gay Pride Month and hopefully an answer from the Supreme Court after hearing those oral arguments. Coming up, I'm going to have some shows with Richard Knight Jr., LGBT movies. That's right. And the summer movie blockbusters. What he says is our favorite movie queen about all the movies coming up. Plus, a new book out for young adults or young people coming out called This Book Is Gay. That's right. Really, really fun conversation with James Dawson of this new book where basically it answers every question you could ever want to know coming out. And it's really for everyone, but definitely anyone who's ever dared to wonder if they were gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer, transgender, curious, any of the other letters of the alphabet. So it's a very, very, very cool interview and a very cool book and a great gift for someone in your life or for yourself who might be coming out, especially a younger person coming out. So lots ahead as we launch into Gay Pride Month. I hope you enjoy this week, everyone. Take good care. Let's celebrate. It's all right. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.